Ideologics, a Talent for Liberty. This is the audio production of The Ravana Elevation by Adewunke. Copyright by the author, all rights reserved. This audio narration is brought to you without prejudice, with great beliefs in truth, decency, dignity, and inclusion in times. Please donate to the free Books for Life course today. Thank you. Part 1 of The Ravana Elevation by Adewunke. This production is dedicated to all those who know and experience love outside the bounds of expectations. My love, my life, my suffering, my freedom, my sacrifice, my truth. To help support my work, please donate through PayPal on my site, and please follow and subscribe to Reels Music on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Pandora, and more. Thank you. The Ravana Elevation, Part 1. A series in Nirvana touches its rags of bliss and unfounded, and the silent ambience resonates from its precursor, a debased quietus replacing life, omitting it. The lantern fly, bright and pompous, reserves its seat as the elusive light corners the thought, pieces strong, pieces lost, and the human element, E.E., dissolves, borrowing into non-space recurring time, the dying marks of a dying breed. It was a perfected specimen for evolutionary ambitions, and its history had been short and highly celebrated. Discover, disrupt, string, and cap the elusive element. The celebration lasted until the human element, H.E., rejected the cap, and the uncapping became infectious. Sitting in the observation room, Dr. Beulah Moore felt the pinch in her hand more disturbingly than she ever did, her anticipation mounting with trepidation. The man doing the nervous pinching, Nathan, her understudy, breathed heavily beside her, also with trepidation. Without any medical degree to speak of, it was the best help she could find under the circumstances, and the circumstances were dire. It was their much unpredictable last chance. It was humanity's last as well. The creature was rousing towards wakefulness, and the room was edged with anticipation. Alongside Nathan, Alan and Dick, they were the last four known of their kind medically equipped for survival, and they had overdosed out with the EE antidote that morning to ensure a survivor in case of exposure. They had cured the antidote for 2 years, edging between optimum survival mode and the vacuous sensation of EE to have the particular day. Human survival outside those she had medically equipped with a cured antidote was highly unlikely, if not impossible. But there was that creature, the one for whom they had suffered most, the human they had experimented on, and the last of our hopes that the human element is salvageable from the reins of the elusive element. He roused slowly but surely, with the initial minor movement of his fingers maturing towards limb sensation.
"The best or worst expectation?" Nathan asked. Tall and lanky with complimentary good looks, he was the handsomest of the trio. He was also the smartest. "A biparasitic creature on one hand, a human in the making on the other," Beulah replied. "Any symbiosis isn't a biparasitic at all?" Nathan asked. "Yes, parasitic symbiosis is possible. A situation in which neither parasite is the host. This may cave into an evolutionary need. The corruption of one, the HE, by the hopefully non-dominant other, the EE, becomes an emerging need for both to survive for some eventual sense of domination by one over the other. The question we need to ask and find out is, who or what is the host in the creature? That could either save our lives or kill us all. So, it's very important. Who is dominant, who is recessive? Nathan asked quietly to himself. There was the reminder that the creature was going to take its time coming into the consciousness they had hoped for, or come into some consciousness they hadn't hoped for, and their fears had mounted. The observation room gave an awful, resounding silence in the moment. H.E., after all, had not been elusive to any of them in his human state. He roused them more than any experimental subject ever could, more than losing the human element. He was their best hope mainly because he was a colleague, a physician, the one who developed the E.E. inhibitors from which she had discovered H.E.P., human element prohibitors enabling the EE. Having been subject to persistent transient states for the last 2 years, and coupled with the fact that Nathan had shaved him for the appearance they expected, he was very much the man she had admired both professionally and romantically. He was younger looking due to the age-defying effects of the human element assistance, HEA, the regenerative enzyme she had developed to work alongside the inadequately efficient EE inhibitors against the HEP. It was the wonder cure she hoped delivered the promises of long-term effects and sustenance for the human element. The derivative towards the ultimate cure was nothing easy. This is way earlier than we thought. Dick, the one duly in charge of security, complained behind her. Tall and muscular, he was the most manly, savage, and most militant of the trio, having been fully trained as a military personnel. There was none she feared more, none she depended on for safety more. "We worked very hard for this. It was expected," Biola replied. Dick shook his head. "You said it may take another few weeks to raise him." Biola turned to face Dick. "I'm not perfect, Dick. Besides, there is no such thing as scientific perfection in these end-of-days practices we have here. All biological signs show he is rousing. Now, and not in a few weeks as I had predicted. And
you don't think this is eerily erroneous, Dr. Moore?" Dick asked.
Beulah hesitated briefly, reconsidering her statement before deciding she must be honest with her crew. There were few, and unlike her, had been forced into whatever medical responsibilities there were, rather than trained for it. She lowered her tone significantly to hide her frustrations as she responded. "Regardless of my wrongdoing, with regards to the timing for fear maturation, he is rousing now. Whatever we do now is of the relevant question."
Dick frowned. "You may be asking the wrong questions, Dr. Moore. What if this thing, everything we have done so far, all the atrocity we committed just to keep this creature alive, was all for naught? If the time for reawakening is wrong, what if I am forced to have to kill him?"
Biola's vulnerable heart weakened, as if it was going to break at the thought of the unimaginable predicament. The expectation of forever could turn into a moment. They could not be faffing around with forever if forever was already a faff. But if forever was already a faff, could they have the moment? If they did not have the moment, the boys could open fire and the moment, our last, their moment, their last, could be lost forever. What was she to fear more? Her tone was accusatory when she spoke.
"He's barely alive, and you're already thinking of killing him?"
Dick narrowed his eyes. "If you think I will murder him in cold blood, you're sadly mistaken, Dr. Moore. The last report of him I read said he was some cold-blooded creature. One of them, the diseased outsiders out there. And the next thing I knew, he was lab mate, your lab mate."
Dick's unsuccessful attempt to quench Viola's fears became apparent. She was trying without much success to stop herself from cringing in fear for the preservation of the creature's life. He was more worried about the cost of the possible preservation of that yet doubtful existential life, the one that was once a successful doctor. "I don't intend to murder him," he reassured her. Why didn't she believe him? Viola took a few steps to stand close to Dick. Dick held her eyes fully. "Do you know why I appointed you head of security, Dick?" Viola asked. Dick shrugged.
"I'm not sure. Could it be because of my good looks, gigantic muscles, and military background?"
She smiled sarcastically. He continued.
"Could it be that you love my human propensity and natural inclination to deliver much necessary violence, or my distinct instinctual ability to smell disaster?"
Viola shook her head. "No. It was because I could always read into your often weak and ineffectual ability to deliver a lie." Dick couldn't evade an accusatory stare. "I don't intend to murder him in cold blood," Dr. Moore muttered. She narrowed her eyes. "Are you sure about that?" Dick reconsidered briefly, studying her, exhaled, and moved his face closer to hers hauntingly.
"It all depends, doesn't it?
Do you think it has predestined cognition like the others before it? Can you envisage a possible part of reaction and counter-reactions as a three when they're about to die? If it does, is the predestined cognition amplified or inhibited by the cure? Should I kill him just because he can preempt my propensity for necessary violence better than you? Probably smarter than you? Quicker than you? Will he kill me before we get a chance to find him out?" Viola closed her eyes slowly, drenched with worry. She felt like screaming out loudly, but clenched her fist nervously instead, weighing the possibility of some hierarchy on the value of life. That of the nature of a normal human she knew as Dick, against that of the normalized human they named the creature. Dick studied her.
"Is that you being able to predict my ineffective lies, or is it my weak truth you predict at the moment?"
She hesitated briefly, thinking. "Neither ineffective lies nor weak truth matter if we don't consider the worth of the subject matter. There is value in the predestined cognition and biopsychological framework, but there is more value on the postdestined what here." Dick exhaled, silenced briefly by a statement, and the muted fact that it hurt to imagine there was more what embedded in an unknown mutation of humanity with equal possibility of being both the peril and the savior of the race. He spoke softly but coldly to minimize the emotional angst plaguing him in the moment.
"What is the predestined cognitive worth of a human life?"
She hesitated, engaging his eyes not to appear disengaged from facts of the moment. "It is important that we consider efficiency and usefulness in ensuring the survival of our species." Dick frowned, narrowed his eyes.
"Anything for a species, Dr. Moore. So what is the predestined cognitive worth of our species as we are right now?"
Viola tried preventing her nervousness from manifesting in her tone as she spoke. "What are you really asking me, Dick?" Dick moved closer to her and spoke in a deliberately slow, haunting tone. "The very same question you asked me earlier. Only mine is in a much necessary other direction. Do you feel the same way I feel, Dr. Moore? Do you value human life over some unpredictably quasi-manageable, resuscitated creatures?" "He's our only hope," she reassured him. He narrowed his eyes. "Are you sure about that?" She hesitated briefly at the insinuation behind his words. "May I remind you that I am the only medical professional here?" Dick smiled sarcastically, maintaining the haunting tone. "That can possibly mean none of us is smart enough
to figure a better alternative for our future than the rearing of a creature. She shook her head at the thought they could be in charge of all operations, including hers, and life seemed a moment's perfect ignorance to a mind like hers, a laughable turn of events to a mind like his. What laughable turn of events could be brewing between his laughable ears? What could be a better alternative, Dick? She asked, restraining a faint emotionality to her tone. That I spread my legs and let you three take turns getting between them? Dick shrugged. It will be what will be most welcomed. Don't forget the creature. If he survives this, he will want his turn at it. He's yet a full-blooded man creature, isn't he, Dr. Moore? Fiona shook her head, pained inside, while holding on to the pre-established atmosphere of control, one she knew she could lose any moment. She spoke in a low, controlled tone. I'm afraid your little Hail Day survival plan is not scientifically viable, Dick. Dick held a mocking smile. Is that so? Or are you beginning to entertain the possibility of turning into those monsters without an infection? She shrugged, the neutral mood of the moment. Don't be silly, Dick. Human males were monsters from the beginning of all things. The virus acts on pre-existing conditions, but it has nothing to work on. Dick studied her. Such. The probability of such an event is to be expected, not just in males, but females as well. What costly life lessons we've learned! She shrugged. Who is to say there isn't a counter-reactionary action in place for such expectation? He hadn't expected such an answer despite his knowledge of her ability to solve problems. He engaged her eyes fully. You would rather kill us than fulfill the necessary purpose of progeny. She drew her head back at the thought of his insinuation. Sounds more like rape than a purposeful act. Besides, don't misunderstand my words. Such an act may be sexually fulfilling for you, but it cannot go beyond that in usefulness. The real aim for it in our current condition would be its possible functionality. It is not enviable at all, but rather functionally unviable. Whatever progeny results from such purposeless show of sexual prowess will not just be a carrier of both EE and HEP, but a much vulnerable carrier. If it does not die in the womb, it can hardly survive life postnatal. The offspring might currently be dormant in us, but is dominant with copulation. And here, a female will be more potent. Such progeny of any kind is a catastrophe for us all. The preservation of the creature's life is the most valuable thing we have at the moment.
We risk it? That's what humans do, Dick replied.
Bella squinted, studying the level of his seriousness in the matter. What was the reasoning behind the poor quality of the pretentious act at the sudden change of heart on the issue? Was this a mutiny in the making she was oblivious to? Her fears were of duplicitous nature. Who was she to fear more, the creator she bred and brought to life, or the humans she currently depended on to keep her safe and sane? But whatever offspring we sire from such unholy union cannot be called human either. And if I am impregnated with a full-blown fetus, which may happen from the relation of two carriers, there is a very high probability I will die alongside the fetus.
Dick shrugged. What's the harm in having fun?
Must it be absolute insanity for me, an absolute death roll?
Bella asked in response.
Nathan spoke. Isn't absolute life a better prediction for our survival, Dr. Moore?
She knew it. Nathan had interrupted intentionally from the apparent need to believe her of the tense conversation. He knew the boys more than she did, knew when the etiquette of control may turn into that of savagery. new shoes more than our open legs aside from our achievements. He was yet to be corrupted, and she was glad for it. It's somewhat unforeseeable corruption on any level within human capacity will be an undoing. She exhaled, holding onto our glaring, newly energized stance against Dick, and resisting the urge to turn around to face Nathan. She spoke. Unlike the pyrocracy survival mode the creature is prone to go into, there is no coevolution possible between the progeny and me. You will have no choice but to spread each other's legs now for the best, alongside the uncured child that'll be dead. It was alarming they were still debating our choices on their survival when she was the only person qualified to give such. She, after all, never debated Dick and safety and missions, neither did the others. Alan, the bad-tempered boatman of medium height, entered the room. He was also the most reserved of them, which, in our opinion, made him unpredictably more dangerous than Dick. He steered from one occupant of the room to the next before engaging Beulah's eyes. Beulah began to grasp the full implication of what was occurring. Why was she the only person not scared of the creature's becoming, of its rousing and rising? She engaged his eyes, wondering if he would express such fears. Do you have any questions, Alan? He hesitated briefly, assuring her the trio must have had a discussion of such fears without her presence. Just in case something goes wrong with the creature's survival, Dr. Moore, do we truly have no other alternative? He exhaled, turned slightly to hold Alan's eyes, fully behind Dick's, grateful for the moment of ease between her and the boys. I would need to produce sustainable co-eval origination and migration. Dick frowned. What the hell does that mean? I would need a procured healthy human cell to clone, and we do not have the specimen, the machinery, or the facility for that now, do we? She replied. Silence fell in the observation room as they heard the creature moan, uttering something incomprehensible yet lively. They all stared at the creature from the observation room. He's our only hope, she reassured them. Dick turned his head toward Nathan's eyes behind ours as some solemn, silent contract. If anything went more than usually wrong, Nathan gets the blame. He took his seat silently. They waited and watched. The Bento Knight could scream its dreams in ashes. It would never make it to the fire. Its eat would have no life but that which perishes it. It dreams first of fire, and its dreams of fire come with its peril in tow. The creature was envisioned not from some chaos deep within, but from a deliberate thinking mind in search of calm, never to quench fire but to deliver life. It roused her to the brink of fear and excitement all the same. The embryo genesis bound to deliver itself or perish all life. It moved again, this time with a semblance of consciousness, turning to gain some yet uncertain level of comfort. And she moved with him then, making a slight jump upward as though her heart would jump out of its cavity. She thought about the complex naturalization and denaturalization that allowed the creature to exist, the atrocities she had consented to without anyone's dissent or consent, the paradox she had enabled. It was done to save a semblance of humanity hanging treacherously on its last leg, she rationalized. It was for the primitive reloading of essential existence that was becoming elusive. She had sought to save humanity when all hope possible in its pure form was degeneration, and all that was left was the variation of degeneration. Dick stood and got out of the observation room, and Beulah breathed a discomforting sigh of relief. Was it to wish her a miracle away? Was it something other? The creature roused slowly and she waited patiently, watching diligently, the turn of his face upwards, Towards the ceiling was a momentary awareness that jolted her off her feet. He was conscious. As if he sensed her proximity to him as she neared the observation glass, he raised his back. She rushed backward to take her seat in an attempt to avoid the inexplicable intrusion upon her senses, the jolt in her nerve endings enveloping, overwhelming her, alarming her to vulnerability, to sensualities, to possibilities. She didn't want her colleagues to notice her weakness as she felt a sense of privacy receding, despite the presence of a barrier. He roused her than any of the men ever could, and he had barely made an attempt. He took to a seated position next, dragging his legs off the bed without any sign of strain to his effort. Her heart was beating faster than she could control. The scene before her within her awareness, beyond her reach. He was awake and alert. Nathan walked over to stand behind her chair. He took to pinching her arm to calm her. She noticed Alan's absence briefly before Dick entered the observation room carrying a bag of ammunition, guns, rifles, grenades, and the much preferred sedative she recommended. She held her breath. The creature stood slowly, walked some distance towards them, and peered into the sturdy glass encasement barricading him from them. He paced, peered, and appeared deliberative. Signs of determined behavior. Procedural thought processing, and no sign of violent tendencies, Nathan commented. Silence presided in the room. She didn't want to appear overly pleased. No sign of violent tendencies, maybe, at least. None observable yet. We should be careful, Nathan. The creature stopped as she spoke, his piercing gaze gripping hers, gripping every essential nerve she possessed. It was as if he could see her, read her, and read into her soul. Could he do it? Irradiated acknowledgement of her, a subtle, intangible reach for her. She was the only presence that mattered in the room, the only presence in the room, the only other entity he wished to reckon with for his conscious awareness. He moved forward to touch his body to the glass enclosure and holding on steadily to her eyes called Viola. She froze and Nathan's hold on her arm still before sliding to a drop. The sensation that enveloped her was intrusive and intense, and she stared straight at the creature, at the strangeness of the reawakening, the lucidity she told others to expect, submerged her. She realized then the side effect of the reawakening she had not paid attention to during her administration of the procedure. He was prone to take the lead position she had with the men at the moment, and she feared that the possibility could destroy the reward order she had worked hard to maintain while he was asleep. While they had their eyes on him, he hardly relinquished his hold on us. She held his eyes steadily. He's on to us. He knows we're here. He knows I am here. Sensitivity is a side effect of AGP suppression. But she stopped short of speaking the truth. The creature seemed rather hypersensitive to AGP suppression. It seemed hypersensitive to everything. Nita was less trusting of the creature's instinct.
It may be only you. It's more unto us than you, Nita commented.
He cocked his gun, turned toward her eyes as she held his.
Predestinate cognition is already apparent, don't you think, Dr. Moore?
She held her breath. There was no way she was going to allow them to murder him in cold blood, just so she can become some useless slut they kept around for their sexual pleasures. She would rather die to prevent the horrid fate. He called her name with more passion to his tone this time. And none in the room could mistake the tone of humanity accompanying the call. The creature yearned for company, ours, and maybe those of others, giving off a hint of the sudden human trait rather than some residual. They all stared at the creature. "We have to go in," Viola said. Alan frowned.
I don't think that's a good idea. What if he's not better? What if that is not him at all? What if this creature is faking it?
Beulah Exil glanced towards the creature, reassured about weakness to meet him, to experience him. It couldn't be faking anything now. It doesn't know who he is yet, human or dumb. Alan deepened his frown. What if he's not better? She exhaled. Something gets better or worse by the measure of value you place on it.
What do you mean by that, Beulah? They had the creature ask through the intercom.
He can hear us, Beulah acknowledged, and they were silent briefly.
I'll blast him back to sleep if he's not better.
Dr. Moore can't bother about resurrecting him afterwards, Dick told the creature, holding his eyes behind the glass bracket. Beulah exhaled, reconsidering the situation briefly. We go in protected.
He can hear that as well, Alan complained.
Nathan stayed on point. Risk analysis, Dr. Moore. Dick stood ready in his gun. His post-destiny cognition gives the impression of hyperactivity. His senses seem overactive.
Are you just saying not to give a better excuse for going in fully harmed, making stuff up? Beulah asked.
Dick shook his head. No.
His predestined cognition seems supernormal.
The universe, Dick, so are his chances of humanity, Beulah admitted. If you trigger Abby, we lose everything we worked for in the last 2 years. If we do not go in, our fate as EE carriers are not good. Whether it is better or worse, our best consequent values in going in.
We go in protected, Nathan said in support of our plan.
Dick can pack the gun and everyone else goes in with the unobsidate. Any one of us can take him down, or we do so simultaneously. If he dies by oversedation, it's the risk we take.
I'm packing a gun too, Alan said. I don't trust that creature at all. Sorry, Dr. Moore.
She shuddered at the thought of failure, covering her face in the expression of her frustrations.
Okay, but if you kill him before I get a chance to save the possible humanity in him, I swear I will kill myself way before you boys can take turns at me. And I need you to promise you won't hurt him unnecessarily.
Alan and Nathan mumbled promises she was smart not to accept at face value. She moved closer to the observation glass and there, locked eyes with the creature. He called her name again in a soft, deliberate whisper, and she was almost certain only she could hear it. She spoke softly, deliberately, certain yet that only he could hear it.
Can you stand all the way back, Dr. Morris?
The test in self-recognition was instant. The creature moved backward and without turning his back on them, sat on the bed.
She exhaled, glad of his self-recognition and obedience, and it felt like a walk on the moon as she walked back to consult with the rest of her crew. They argued about Dick going in first, going in armed. Beulah argued against the move and was certain Dick could make the mistake of killing the creature on sight. Reaching the consensus, Dick was too quick to trigger and could be the worst risk, Alan went in first, armed. They followed cautiously, all equipped with the inno-seated. Dick, the last to come in, was also harmed, a decision made against the consensus. They ordered themselves farthest from the creature, their backs to the observation glass. Holding Beulah's hand and pulling her forward slowly, Alan kept her beside him as she spoke. How do you feel?
Tall, handsome, intelligent and efficient, Dylan Morris seemed the emblem of affection, professionally and socially. He exhaled, and his expression softened at the full sight of her.
Fine, he replied in a calm, reassuring tone, and stared towards Alan's gun before tracing his eyes along Dick's gun.
Why?
He asked earnestly. The room was silent briefly. With his long and steady gaze on Dick behind her, in an instant, she made a quick realization and turned around.
You didn't. Dick shrugged, holding the semi-automatic rifle pointed straight at Dylan. Better safe than sorry.
She turned around to face Dylan again. Do you remember the fate of our world at some or any moment? Viola asked. Dylan exhaled. Yes. Viola exhaled as the inch of humanity in him reassured her margin and believed slightly that Akira had walked. I must inform you of the things you missed while sleeping. Gesturing, she ushered the rest of the crew into a corner. They obliged reluctantly. All three were equipped with guns as Nathan took the corner, and all three guns were pointed at the creature. She paced against the wall of the observation room briefly before briefing him on the events of the years he was not himself or anyone else. A mark must to a fleeting rippling specter correspond as well as disdain, a point to a potent reference as well as regard. She walked too early, with a sense of apprehension and longing, looking forward to a day more exciting to her than the last 2 years of work and loneliness. Ensuring his life and revival had kept her alive beyond the hope for humanity she clung to. She had been irrevocably attracted to him before the invasion, had nursed his disease as she nursed him, had developed a cure to spare his life. When all was said and done, with the success of the revival through the Rivana Elevation Project, she was intensely in love with the man he was and what he could become. At dawn, she dared entry into the observation room alone, aching to have his company to herself before the men intruded. There, she got on her knees beside his bed and watched him sleep for a few seconds before the proclivity of his proximal sensitivity to presence roused him to wakefulness. He held her eyes in that position, arousing her unexpectedly, firmly, and locking gaze with her as he stood slowly to tower over her. He stood in the full glory of his nakedness and took her breath for an instant. He stared down at her, grinning. You wanted to see the view? She took in the view again, closing her eyes slowly to attain the semblance of inner strength against the rush of not endings to the opening between her legs. She stood to gain eye level with him. I created it. He smiled. I need a shower. She smiled. Is that an invitation or you need to feel clean? He narrowed his eyes as he widened his smile. Must it be either in particular? She was in some elevated mood, one quite reminiscent of the symptomatic effect of the Rivana elevation landscape. Her hands graced his hands intentionally and she slowly drew him towards the door. Where are we going? He asked, unsure about the reason for her excitement. He followed. The rush between the closed out spaces, demarcated with plastic covers and crushed out wooden structures, until they got to the pool. She took her clothes off slowly, deliberately, engaging his eyes. He smiled at the sight of her, the full attention to the details of her form arousing him to the maximum extent. She got in the waters to the rush of the soothing coldness, plunged him into the same with the call of her fingers. He obliged, rushing into the watery expansion. She flinched as he flinched, his lean muscles contracting without release as he got to her. The sparkle of humanity she had recognized only slightly earlier was gone, and her heart began to beat faster. His hands closed in on her calves, gripping her with the same unpredictable level of strength she had expected from his transformation. He took her out of the pool as easily as he got in it. It was a chance to get away from the unpredictability of his sudden changed demeanor. She crawled with hands and knees on the ground to get away from him to a stand. It brought her down in one quick, powerful leap, and in the tonality of the vocal expression of her descent, she voiced a plea. No. It was inevitable. She had imagined things differently, imagined romance, envisioned some prepackaged, unpredictable estimation of intellectual pleasure, trusting the emotional towards the sexual, culminating towards an eventual, inestimable intercourse. Instead, she was ravaged by a recognizable, tamed savage. Let me. Let me. Let me.
The music used in this album is Beyond Love by Real from the Phantom album. Don't forget to subscribe to Real's music on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Pandora, and more. Wind, a new album, is coming soon. Thank you. This audio narration is brought to you without prejudice, with great beliefs in truth, decency, dignity, and inclusion in times. Please donate to the free Books for Life course today. Thank you.